Grace, the Amy Santiago of Royal Bloggers.
And I'm Jessica, the Dorothy Sporanath of Royal Bloggers.
And we'd like to welcome you to On Air, the podcast where two cynical Brits discuss the latest royal news and the truth behind the stories. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the On Air podcast. We have got some light bites today. Yeah. It's amazing. We've not had light bites for about 5,000 years. Yeah. So we've got three little light bites, all from all around the world, whole range of topics.
Yes. So if people are not long-term listeners, because we've got quite a few new listeners in the recent weeks, our episodes now are really kind of like we take something and we talk about it for an hour and a half. and it's like a deep dive into a particular topic or a particular theme. But if you actually go back and listen, our early episodes were really these light bites, which are kind of like short topics that don't really take up an hour and a half in their own right. Anyway, yeah, so a return to light bites would be nice. Tell us what our first light bite is today, Grace.
Our first light bite is the news of a new upcoming royal baby from Jordan, because the Jordanian royal family, the Royal Hashemite Court, announced that Crown Prince Hussein and his wife, Princess Rajwa, are expecting their first child in the summer of this year.
So a little bit of background, just because we understand that some people who come to listen to the podcast don't follow lots of different royal families. So Hussein is the Crown Prince of Jordan. He is the son of King Abdullah and Queen Rania. And Rajwa is his wife. She is an architect who's from a wealthy, well-connected Saudi Arabian family. In her own right, she is the first cousin twice removed of the King of Saudi Arabia. So she's not just some random woman he met on the street. She's pretty up there. And in August of 2022, it was announced that they were getting married. And we discussed that in episode 35, because it was a massive shock at the time, because most of their courtship had been during COVID. So nobody even knew they were dating. And then suddenly he was getting married to her. So it was a big shock. And then they married in June 2023, which we covered in episode 65, which is actually our fourth highest, most listeners out of all of our episodes. Fun fact.
Which is good, because it was a cracking wedding.
Yeah.
A brilliant day for me personally. I was not there. I wasn't invited, but I had a lovely time.
Yes, it was great. And their shock engagement. And so they've given us, surprisingly, considering we only found out that she existed less than 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, they've given us a lot of interesting content. So thank you to them. And yeah, now we have another one.
Yeah, a baby. Hopefully, in a weird way, to give us some more content. We don't know much about Jordanian royal babies in this sort of exact situation. So it's a bit more exciting. Get to sort of guess what's going to happen.
My initial reaction was I was very pleased, even though I don't necessarily follow Hussein and Rajwa that closely, like in the way that I do with the Swedish royal family, for example. But I was still really pleased, because I think we've talked about this a few times before, but I thought 2023 was not a great year for royal watching, in my opinion. I didn't really enjoy it. And then when we were going into 2024, we thought it was going to be really boring again. And then it wasn't really boring so far. But instead of being exciting and interesting and, fun, it's been dramatic and worrying, and everyone's been really annoying. There's been lots to talk about, but it's annoyed me a lot. So I really wanted, for a long time, I felt this kind of nostalgia, maybe it's just getting older or something, but of wanting to go back to like the 2014 to 2018 era, where there were loads of babies, loads of weddings. Hussein and Rajwa are one of the last sort of mainline couples who will be having children, because all the rest of them have had kids, like William and Kate have had their kids, Victoria and Daniel, and then the next lot won't be getting married for a while and having children probably. So that's sort of Christian, Amalia, Elizabeth, are all kind of late teens, early 20s, so they probably won't be doing this for another 10 years. And then everyone else who's having babies and weddings is like 75th in line to the throne, so nobody cares about them. So this is like the last like mainline royal couple for a while.
It was a bit like, I saw the news and my first thought was, haven't they already had a baby? Like, I just assumed they had, because everyone's had a baby. And then my brain kicked in again. I was like, no, that was, I'm not sure who I got them confused with, but I clearly confused them with someone else. And then initially I was very happy. It's a baby. Everyone's happy about babies. And I really like Hussein and Rajwa. And also I think at the start of the year, we saw them quite a bit in quite a short period of time, and then they've been a lot quieter. So I was kind of wondering, sort of in passing, oh, I wonder what Hussein and Raj were up to. I feel like we've not really seen them. So it was a nice surprise to be like, ah, they were obviously preparing to have a baby. They were making children. It's fine. But yeah, it was, yeah, just nice for it to be a positive news story. And also a positive news story, like you said, about like this baby is, at the moment, would be second in line to the throne. And all the other second line to the throne positions are taken. So we've got to wait a long time to get any more second in. Even if it's babies that are like, I'm vaguely interested in, because, you know, they're the first baby for a couple, or like the third baby for a mainline couple, that the key slots have been taken now. So
I want to be very clear that it's up to them when they have a baby. And I know that. And I'm not saying this in a really critical way. I'm just saying this in a totally selfish way of like me thinking, they waited 6 months or a year, then that would have felt like, you know, it's dragging out the things we've got to be excited about. Because once this one's done, then we're back in the same situation of, oh, well, we've got nothing now. What are we going to do? Let's just enjoy the moment. That's not a genuine criticism of anyone. It's just my selfish brain going, wait a minute.
I did a bit of a quick scan to see, like, who else is pregnant? I was like, are there any others? I was like, who else? Princess Alexandra of Luxembourg is still pregnant. I thought she's been pregnant for a very long time now.
Yeah. I forgot that she was pregnant.
So I think we are really running, sort of scraping the bottom of the barrel for babies at the moment. So this is a nice surprise.
I wonder how many of our listeners could point Princess Alexandra of Luxembourg out in a crowd, you know?
I wonder if I could do it, if I'm honest.
But anyway, if you've been missing the kind of the joy of the new baby feeling that you get after a royal baby is born, then this might be your chance to get it again. But something you were kind of hinting at there, I think, is we don't know a lot of things, but we don't really know like when the baby is going to be born. And I think I did the same thing of looking back at like where she's been. To my knowledge, we haven't seen her for just over 2 months, but her father did die on the 18th of February. So that also could explain. I do think actually, like a general observation is that I don't think I've seen Rajwa that much anyway.
Yeah, in January, I think we saw her quite a few times in quick succession. Like I say quite a few, I'm thinking like three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Three quick times. And I was like, ah, Rajwa's out. And then I just didn't see her again. And I was like, oh, Rajwa's not out. She's gone away again.
Yeah. So it's hard to know, like, sometimes you can tell because you've seen somebody in public for a certain, and you can kind of tell like when there might have been a start of a baby bump kind of thing. Sometimes you know because they drop out of public view and you don't see them at all. And you're like, oh, well, it was probably around that time that they, you know, but it's very hard with Rajwa because also her father died. So we don't know exactly if she's been off because she's had a difficult start to the pregnancy maybe, or if she's been off because her dad died, or both, or neither, or, you know, it could be anything really. So it's very hard to actually know because they said summer. I mean, through Googling this, I did find out that a lot of places count September as summer, early September, which is madness. It's not early, it's not summer.
Autumn, guys.
It's autumn. But I think I would say June to August. So that could mean that she's due in less than 8 weeks, or that she's due in 5 months. or 4 months, sorry. So, you know, that's quite a lot.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking, well, technically we're in British summertime, but I'm not thinking she's going to be due tomorrow. But, like, in my head, I was like, when is it sunny? Because that's summer. And then in the announcement they used one of their wedding photos, which was a year ago. Was really unhelpful because you couldn't even be like, oh, look at that picture, she's got a humongous baby bump, she's due in 2 weeks, or, you know, there's not, or like, look, you know, obviously for most royals they use a picture from a recent engagement when they announce it, and then you're like, well, they didn't have a bump 2 weeks ago, so we're probably at the 12-week mark. But it's hard to tell.
The last time she appeared was sort of early February. She was wearing quite a form-fitting dress, not like tight. So I would guess that she's probably not due in 8 weeks. No. But it's very hard to know because some people are very slim and pop at the very end. You know, we'll be waiting for like potentially 3 months. Just being like, when exactly is this baby coming? It would have been nice to see her a little bit more before she announced the baby. Like, I'm really pleased for them, and as I say, it's up to them when they have a baby, and it's nothing to do with me really, but I do feel like I would have liked to get to know Rajwa as a person before we get to know her as Rajwa, a mum, because, you know, mums speak about how like their identity can kind of be taken over by being a mum. And I think because we didn't know anything about them when they got engaged, and then they don't do like what they do in some Western countries where they have like a sit-down interview where you get to know somebody a bit more and hear them speak. And I really don't know very much about, like, I know facts about her, but I don't know anything about what she's interested in or, you know, how she met Hussein and their relationship and kind of anything about her as a person.
You know, when Rajah and Hussein got married, they were like, Hussein is Crown Prince Hussein, but Rajah was just going to be Princess Rajah. Like, she wouldn't be taking on the kind of, sounds a bit wasted, but like, you know, the spouse role
Yes, yeah.
in a weird way, that consort role. And she was just going to kind of be like Mrs. Hussein, who also is a princess, for at least for a while. I think, you know, I wasn't necessarily expecting to see her loads this year. Or even in the sort of near future. And I imagine that having a baby or babies in the next couple of years, then perhaps sort of once they've done the baby thing, then they'll be like, right, we're back. We're ready to
Yes. It's just like the narrative sometimes, you know, whenever a royal is pregnant, all of the headlines are like, pregnant Kate goes to the shops. Yeah. So, you know, it's just about how they position it, I suppose, which actually does lead to something, to my next point, which is also something that you hinted at earlier, which is kind of, we also don't really know very much about how Jordan handles royal babies. As we discussed in previous episodes, Jordan is slightly unusual in that the king can choose his heir, not from anyone. So it couldn't be like, I'm going to choose my next door neighbor or my butcher or this guy I saw who drove me to the airport. You know, like they can't just choose whoever they want, but they can choose their brother rather than their son. And so the crown prince role in Jordan is important, obviously, and Hussein's had it for a long time and has, you know, done a lot of work as crown prince, but it's not like fixed in the way that it is in other countries.
Yeah, I tried to sort of track back because before Abdullah was king, before he was crown prince, even though he was the oldest son, he was just Prince Abdullah. So then I tried to look at his brother when he had children, and that was incredibly unhelpful because Google has this tiny little thing like, yeah, he has some children, that's great.
Well, the tendency might be to compare to his father and Rania, but you can't really compare that because Abdullah wasn't actually made the heir to the throne until a few weeks before his father died. And so even what they chose to do for their children might not be something that we can draw from as a precedent because they weren't in exactly the same situation. It was also, you know, they stopped having children almost 20 years ago. So there's also that factor of like times have changed. But I do think it's interesting to look at what they did anyway, just information. I would say undeniably the Jordanian royal family, when it comes to the arrival of a new baby, are more open than any other royal family in the weirdest way. And I don't mean that, I mean there's one specific reason that I say that really. So like all the other stuff, like updating you with statements and all that stuff, they might not be very open about that. But there's this extraordinary thing. So in the past, there's been a lot of criticism about things like Kate going out from the hospital and with her newborn babies and Diana doing it and so on. That pales in comparison to the Jordanian royal family because they released photographs of Rania holding the baby with the family around her hospital bed, which is nuts.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these things where I'm always like, could you imagine a crazy world where one day, like, Kensington Palace will be like, surprise, this was Kate having a baby in a hospital. And I'm like, no, they actually do that in Georgia.
Yeah.
It feels really, it's really sweet in a weird way because it's what like your normal person does when they have a baby. They take a picture, you have all the family at the round a hospital bed with an exhausted looking mum in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely had her hair and makeup done. I've got to say that, which most mums probably don't, but yes.
Yeah, you know, they're very sweet, but it's, you know, Rania and Abdullah and Hussein even are quite open. They're quite Rania and Abdullah are very open on sort of social media in a way that lots of other royal families aren't. But then in the same way they are so intensely private at the same time. And I'm
Yes.
like, surprise, we're getting, you know, married. And then also like, surprise, here's something in their hospital bed.
Yeah, it's very inconsistent. I think the common thread is it's about control. They're very sort of strategically open. So like they'll post photographs of them all together for somebody's birthday, rather, it's not an official photo shoot like you might get in other royal families. It's like them around a dinner table having dinner together. And that's very strategic because they're presenting an image. And it's not, it's not completely unusual. Every royal family has a communications team and PR people and all that sort of stuff. We just don't really know Rajwan Hussein's approach because they're not Rania and Abdullah. Like, we know Hussein is very open on social media in a similar way to his parents, I would say. But does that extend to Rajwan in a hospital bed, or will they do it in a more candid sort of way? Like the Swedish royal family have photographs of them leaving the hospital with the baby in the carrier because it's like a tradition. Maybe they'll do something like that, so it's not quite her in the bed, but it's so it's hard to know. We don't know.
Yeah, and I think, by the time their youngest son, Prince Hashem, was born, they were king and queen. Yeah, so they were off, distributing food to needy families and as a gift because they'd had a baby and it was their way of sort of celebrating. Whereas, Hussein and Rajwa are not in the position where they can just order that to happen because they're not the monarch. So it's really there is no sort of matching situation, and I think, even if you look at royal families around Jordan, like if you look at the Saudis and what they've done, it's a lot of kind of announcements. We can find the announcements for the recent babies that have been born sort of the last few years, but when you go back to the first baby, the baby that would be in sort of this position, the Crown Prince wasn't the Crown Prince at that point, or they were just a normal prince, or so it's really hard to find a comparative person to compare to. Even looking at things, like such as when the baby's name would be announced and things like that's really tricky. I know for Prince Hashem, his name was announced with the birth announcement. It was like Queen Rania has given birth to Prince Hashem, but we don't know whether it would be something where they would announce it in the press statement, whether Rajwa and Hussein would want to announce it themselves in, by Instagram, or whether they'll announce it a few days later. It's really exciting, I think, to get into a new royal baby and not have a clue what's really going to happen. Because if, tomorrow Victoria or Kate announced they were pregnant, I'd be like,
You
weird,
know the
but
drill.
I know where we're going. I know what to expect, step by step. Whereas this time we don't.
Yeah, that is a good way to look at it as well, as being exciting. It's not just one of the last mainline royal babies for a while, but it's also one that we don't really know anything about. So that is quite an exciting thing. And you did mention the name, so I'm going to just briefly talk about names. I don't usually like guessing names because obviously we don't know if it's a boy or a girl. The first baby is always quite difficult because I never have any idea what they're going to say, and I don't like guessing things where I can be wrong, but I have no evidence to use to make my opinion. But anyway, what we do know is that there's a tradition. Most of the Jordanian royal baby boys, like in the main line, tend to be named after like a grandfather or a great grandfather. The baby's great grandfather would also be Hussein. So I don't know that they'll call the baby Hussein. The grandfather would obviously be Abdullah.
Yes.
So will they? And it might be easier to distinguish between a King Abdullah and a Prince Abdullah, who's a baby. So, and they might not be mentioned as often in the same conversation as, whereas a father and son you would expect to be. So that's my current front runner. But then the problem is that you'll then get into a system where if they all name them after the grandparents, it's just going to be an Abdullah and Hussein forever, like in Denmark, where it's Christian and Frederick and they alternate. And that's really boring.
My initial name I wrote down was Abdullah because of the grandfather link, and also this is the first grandchild as well. Rajwa's father died in January. No, he didn't. Died in February, and then the court had 3 days of mourning. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that it would be a little baby Khaled named after the maternal grandfather either. But I also went through the siblings' names that came up in both families for sort of Rajwa, Hussein, and their parents, just to see what the sort of common overlaps were. And they both have a lot of Faisals in their family. So I thought that's the only other name that I could come up with for boy.
I think that would be the first King Faisal in Jordan, wouldn't it?
So funny because they're such a new monarchy, but at the same time, they're like the second oldest royal family.
They can trace their descent back to Muhammad or something. And I think, you know, there's certain names that like have been used, but were used kind of like a King Charles III situation. There was a obvious, I mean, I always thought he was going to go by King Charles III, but people trying to make stories out of things would go, oh, will he be King Charles III? Because the last two King Charleses didn't have a great time. So, you know, there are some royal family members who have had, I think, have been kings, but were not great and people didn't like them. So they may not choose those names. But yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see. I don't think we'll see any like Kevins or
Gary.
but Gary, yeah. Prince Gary of Georgian.
I'm fairly sure that, well, I'll say I'm fairly sure. The start of my sentence is that we know that Rajah and Hussein are practicing Muslims. And I'm fairly sure that traditional Islamic practice is that the baby's name has to be from the Quran if it's a boy. So I think that does rule out a lot of names, and it's why, you know, you get families where they just reuse the same names because there are a limited number to choose from. So, I mean, in a weird way, it's probably one of the easier names to guess because we do have a limit, but it's quite a big limit. So we can't just be like, surprise.
Yeah, we're not going to do an Elon Musk. In terms of girls, there's less, I guess, sort of pressure on like the significance of a name, I suppose. But I do still think it'll be something within the family. So it could be like Muna, which is the name of Abdullah's mother, who is very beloved within the family.
Yeah, that was my front runner. I also had like Dina or Dana because that name comes up a lot, I think, in the Jordanian royal family and the sort of Rajwa's side of the family as well.
I don't know. I also don't know if there's a different, if there's a like, even though they're all Muslim and they all speak Arabic, are there certain names that are more common in Saudi Arabia than in Jordan? Like, I think there are certain names that are probably more common in England than they are in America, even though we both speak English.
Yeah. I think for the boys' names in particular, I did a lot of checking of like, where have these people been kings of in the past? And it's all like, you know, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Iran, that kind of Middle Eastern monarchies. And then for the girls, I was like, I feel like there's a lot of the same names that come up across the families, which I only learned from Rajah and Hussein's wedding when someone would be like, oh, look, this is, you know, Princess Aaliyah. And I was like, but we've just seen a Princess Aaliyah. Like, this is the other one. Okay.
I mean, to be fair to them, how many Philips and Elizabeths are there?
I mean, I can't judge. We've got like four Eleanors or Leonors and
Louis's name is Louis, and his older brother George's middle name, Louis. So, you
his
know,
dad's middle name, Louis.
Louis. So, you know, it's not like we're particularly imaginative either.
And I think that's like, I always think, you know, when it does come to the sort of the mainline British royals, like for William and Kate, I found it quite easy to guess there. Style of names because they were just reusing family names. So that, fine. And I think in the set, I'd expect something similar-ish here because I would expect it to be a family name they've used before. So I feel more like, oh, I can make a guess. I only have a million to choose from, but I have got a list.
Yeah, exactly. I think Abdullah and Muna are very sensible suggestions. Like, if we're not right, we probably aren't going to be that far wrong either. So, our next light bite, we are moving away from Jordan and we're coming back to Europe and we're going to Spain. So, on the 9th of April, Queen Sophia was admitted to hospital with a urinary tract infection. And if again, if you're not that aware of the Spanish royal family, Queen Sophia is the mother of the current king, Felipe. And I've also written down she's 86. I don't really know if I suppose that's relevant, but I've just written down she's 86. So there we go. So what they said at the time of the announcement was that she was admitted with a urinary tract infection, as I said, and that her progress is, quote, very fast and favorable, and that she's being kept under observation. My first thing is potentially too much information, but I have had a UTI before and I sympathize greatly with Sophia because it was the single most painful experience of my life.
It's annoying, and it's one of those things where you almost feel like you can't be like, sorry, I can't come to work today. You
Yeah.
kind of feel like I've got it's just a UTI, I can power through. You can't. You will never power through.
No, it's horrible. And it can also be quite dangerous in older women as well, and it can also lead to like bladder infections and things like that. So I am not surprised at all that, you know, my UTI, obviously I didn't go to hospital, but with Sophia's I can understand why, because she's 86. This is why I mentioned her age.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I saw a sort of UTI and I was like, oh, a UTI. And I was like, my actual sister has been in hospital with UTIs, so and she's not an old lady. Like, it can be quite bad. And they can spiral really sort of quickly as well. I think if you don't, especially if you have a lot. And, you know, Sophia seems fairly healthy, but I'm sure they've not told us every time she's ever had a UTI in her life. So perhaps they're like, right, you've had seven this week. Come on, mum, in you go.
Well, I mean, that's one thing to talk about is really, we've talked about health a lot in recent weeks, and Sophia, I suppose, unlike a lot of other royals, has kind of no real history of health issues, or none that have been put on the record. As you say, it's possible that she's had a million UTIs over the years, but she's never said anything. Unlike some other royal families, where this is the latest in a long line of health issues. She is actually very healthy for somebody of her age.
Yeah, I went because she was out. This came out on Tuesday. She went to hospital on the Tuesday. On the weekend before, she was at a wedding. The Monday before, she was at a funeral, which I mean, just a bit of
Need a baby to be born, and then she's completed everything.
funeral. You know, she was due to be, you know, out and about the Friday. So she was all sort of floating along, busy, busy, busy. And then she obviously went to hospital, and then everything was like, it's the first time she's been in hospital since she gave birth to Felipe. And I was like, I don't believe that. I'm gonna go hunt this down. And I could not find anything to disprove it, probably because they went lying. But then I also was like, well, I don't know what to make notes on then, because normally I go, right, brilliant. What else have they been investigating for? And that's a whole chunk of my notes. And I was like, but she hasn't been to hospital for ages. Like her son is in his 50s.
That's a long time actually when you think about it, just been to hospital. Yeah, no, and very inconsiderate of her to have not been sick in the past just because it would help our podcast in the future that she didn't know existed. It was so inconsiderate. I bet she did deliberately.
Yeah, she's been like, no, I'm going to eat all my vegetables and have good vitamins so I don't have to get to hospital just to be inconvenient.
I mean, like, all we have is she had COVID, but she didn't go to hospital. And I also had COVID, and I didn't actually, I wouldn't have known I had COVID if I hadn't had to do the test because I'd been traveling. And that's literally the only health thing. She's healthier than I
She's way healthier than I am. I've been to hospital loads more than that.
am. Well, yeah, I know. It's actually thinking about it, that makes much more sense. All these young people, like Gwyneth Paltrow and all of that lot, who are trying to like push healthy lifestyles. I want like a woman who's 95 to tell me about the secret to a healthy lifestyle because she's living proof.
Yeah, when you start listening to young, healthy women and listen to old, healthy women instead.
So she was admitted on the evening of the 9th. We, as I mentioned, we've had a lot of health discussions lately, and I don't think this is as dramatic as some of those health discussions. But I still think that, it's part of this overarching conversation. So there are parallels and comparisons that we can draw. And I think one of the first developments was on the 10th, so the day after, because she was admitted in the evening, I think, on the 9th. On the 10th, we had her son, Felipe, who's the king, visiting the hospital. And it was very interesting to me because they did something similar to the tactic that we discussed in episode 93, which was what the Norwegians do, which is quite different from other royal families, or the British royal family specifically, where he spoke to the press upon leaving the hospital.
Yes, I looked at it. I knew she'd been in hospital. I didn't pay any attention really until we found out we did it for the podcast. So then I went back and had a look. And I was like, okay, first of all, Felipe was in all the time. He was like, yeah, I'm gonna give up and work for a few days, just go hang out at hospital for my mum. But I like, you know, I think we said in the episode where we spoke about King Harold's health and how the Norwegians had handled it, that the approach of sort of casual statements are really, really helpful, and they're really a really good way of sort of allaying fears and getting messages across without going to the effort of releasing a full press statement that says she's cheerful today.
There's a benefit in kind of having this moment with the press to just comment on things. So I like that he did that. I think that it was very similar to what the Norwegians do, although slightly different. They sort of did that at an engagement. There was the press there and they would go over and just have a little chat with them, which is something they do anyway when they're at engagements. It wasn't unusual for them. Whereas, so Felipe left the hospital. He'd only been there for about 20 minutes, half an hour. So clearly she's not dying. I think he probably would have been there for a bit longer. But the difference was that his statement was given as he was leaving. He rolled down his car window. And
Love it.
it's very, I don't know why it's so funny.
Yeah, it's the mental image I have of Felipe kind of driving past and put the window down and be like, yeah, she's fine, don't worry, guys, and driving off again. It's brilliant. I love it.
It's very like, I want to update you, but I also don't want to have to stand near you.
That will be from the safety of my car.
Yeah. But he was, when he rolled down his window, he was smiling. So again, immediately we had a sense that everything was good. And he assured the press that she is lively, energetic, and eager to return or to get out of hospital and go back to normal as soon as possible. Without him having to necessarily say too much, you kind of get a sense of like wanting to get out immediately because it's inconveniencing them to have to be in hospital.
Yeah, like, just got things to do,
Yeah,
guys.
that was the sense I got from it anyway. And then Felipe's sister, Sofia's daughter, Infanta Elena, who visited on the 10th. So then the day after, so this is the 11th, Felipe visited his mother again. And this time he was accompanied by his wife, Queen Letizia. And we have another window rolling.
Love it. Big fan of this.
I mean, I suppose they have fancy cars with like a button that they press. But in my head, I'm imagining them with like a handheld rolly window that they have to put down themselves, which is always such a nightmare. But she probably didn't have that. So she put down the windows with her fancy button and waved to the press on the way into the hospital car park. So yes, that, Spanish rules love waving at our windows. But so on the way out, they went to the hospital, and then on the way out, they did speak to the press very briefly to kind of just reiterate what they'd said the day before. She's doing well. She wants to be discharged as soon as possible, but confirm that they don't have a date for the exact date, date and time that she'll be discharged from hospital. So a little bit of extra information which hadn't been in the statement, I suppose, or a little bit of clarification on things.
Yeah, I was quite impressed with the way they managed to get so much information into like a couple of sentences each time. I was like, it took the Norwegian royal family about 15 statements to get to this point, and they said the same thing every single time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yes, of course, one of the big headlines whenever Letizia has any interaction with Queen Sophia is, the sort of drama between them. And the press obviously love that. So it's, in case you don't know, it's very famously believed for lots of different reasons that I won't get into, that Queen Letizia and her mother-in-law, Queen Sophia, do not get on. And they are compared a lot in the press because Queen Sophia is like the beloved, angel queen. I saw one headline saying that Letizia, quote, silences the rumors by finally visiting Queen Sophia.
Finally.
She was admitted less than 48 hours before that headline for a minor condition. And also, should I just point out as well, we'd seen at that point her being visited by King Felipe, her son, and Infanta Elena, her daughter. She has another daughter.
And a husband.
And a husband, yes, that was my other point. Yeah, she has one of her own children, and her husband have not visited her. And we know that she's estranged from her husband, and he lives in the Middle East most of the time. But it's just interesting to me that it's always a footnote, that other people hadn't done it, or like her husband is not even in a position where he could visit her in the hospital because he lives in the Middle East because they don't live together, and that's not even mentioned. But the fact that Letizia did go, but with it, took longer than 12 hours to go is apparently like, she's silencing, like, just it's so tabloidy and transparent and silly.
I love it. I do love a bit of drama when it's got absolutely nothing to do with
Well,
my.
I mean, I'm very
Well.
protective over Queen Letizia's, but yeah, no. So I, that was, I didn't see it in too many things, I should say, as well. It was just in a couple of Spanish language articles that I saw that, and I was just like, this is like, it just, I've seen a lot of these articles recently about like there was one about it's not about Spain, but Mary and Frederick on the ski slopes in the Daily Mail, and it was about how Mary, they obviously hate each other, and Mary gave Frederick a, sort of frosty glance. She was wearing sunglasses.
Oh, I saw that one. And I was like,
How do you know?
they're barely. It's not like they're like blatantly ignoring each other. They just happen to be, like when you're walking next to someone, you're not staring into their eye.
Keep saying that she's got certain facial expressions, and I'm like, how do you know that when you can't even see her eyes?
They're just really clever. The press has got ability to see through sunglasses.
Yeah, apparently so. It's just that kind of article that, like, just it's so stupid.
And it's so fun, and it'll be exactly the same people who are sitting there enjoying Mary's frosty glance at Frederick, and Harry and Meghan's disappointed, you know, shrugs from each other, and William and Kate's glares at each other. It's all the same people. Like, yeah, definitely true. And then the second you turn it towards their royals, they're like, no, that's wrong. Just never, ever trust the press.
Exactly, yes. But then the last piece of news, which came out yesterday but for us, I believe, which was the 13th of April.
It took me a while because I found it today and then I was trying to count back how many hours it was. Yeah. Is that today? Oh, yes, it was yesterday.
Yeah, time differences and all that. Yes, was that Queen Sophia has been let out of hospital? Discharged from hospital, that's the word.
Discharged.
She's been discharged. So clearly it wasn't, it genuinely, they were being genuine, like it wasn't a serious illness because she was only in hospital for a few days. And we have another car window rolling down.
I know. I thought, well, you just came out of hospital and you're still rolling down the window and waving and giving statements. So proud.
I just find it so funny. Whenever they roll down their windows, it gives me the feeling of, and I'm not saying this is the same situation, but it's just the action of doing it is kind of, it feels like when a politician has been involved in some sort of sex scandal and the press arrive at their front door and they are like, they don't know how to handle this. The scandal's just broken. And so they're doing things like getting into their car and like interacting with the paparazzi in a way they probably shouldn't be. And they always roll down their windows and like say stuff, or, you know, they're taking the bins out. It's like that kind of sort of, it just, I don't know, it just feels really strange. And I can't really quite describe it, but we had another car window rolling down, and she said that she felt like new and that she wanted to thank the media for worrying about her and being there at the hospital.
I mean, that is also 100% how I would deal with the media, but like, thank you so much for worrying about me, guys. Yeah. I can tell that you really care.
Yeah. Definitely isn't to get make money.
I mean, I'd never had any worries that Sophia was old, but she did that old woman thing of being like, I feel like a new woman.
Apparently she has left hospital with an intravenous line, a drip, I guess, and that she's going to continue to rest at home, and then we'll have an antibiotic treatment for the infection. So obviously she's still not like completely out of the woods, but she doesn't need to be in a hospital anymore. They can keep up her regimen, her health regimen and her treatment regimen from home. So that's obviously the best place to be, I suppose, especially if your home is a palace.
Yeah, it's not like she's going back to some kind of cold flat. She'll be fine at home. She probably has medical professionals waiting on her in a cozier place.
Yes, in the medical wing of the palace. The hospital that she has built. Yeah, I'm sure she'll be absolutely fine. But I really liked that she went in on the Tuesday and she came out on the Saturday. This is how you do it. And I'm going to say this to all royals because we record on a Sunday. So Tuesday, it means that it's started. It's something that we know that we can talk about. But having it wrapped up by Saturday meant that it wasn't like a story that we knew would change between recording and putting the episode out. Like, it's probably, unless she drops dead, which could happen, but probably won't. I imagine the story isn't, I've cursed her now, but I imagine the story isn't going to change drastically. This is how you get into the podcast, which I'm sure every royal is scrambling for. There you go.
Desperate want to get in there. Yeah. They've got a little ranking list. Be like, who's mentioned the most? It's me.
Yeah.
So, for our third light bite, we are talking about the upcoming state visit from Spain to the Netherlands, which by the time you listen to this will have happened. So you'll be thinking, ah, oh, I already know the answer to all of the questions you're going to have, which is great for you. And then you'll be able to laugh if we're very wrong. But rather than talking about the whole event, because state visits are by their very nature quite boring, we're talking about the exciting part, which is the state banquet, which will happen that first evening. So on the 17th, and will be attended by King Felipe and Queen Letizia, by King William Alexander and Queen Maxima, as well as Princess Marguerite, Princess Beatrix, and Princess Katharina Amalia. And that means her debut as a state banquet tiara wearer. It's always exciting.
Yes. So this was confirmed a little while ago, but we didn't have time to talk about it because we kept talking about everybody being sick. But if you don't know, Katerina Amalia is the heir to the Dutch throne. She is the Princess of Orange is her official title, but yeah, she's heir to the Dutch throne. The daughter of the king and queen, 20 years old. So she's in that group that we mentioned earlier of kind of the up and coming heirs who aren't yet at the stage of marrying and having babies and all that kind of stuff, but are adults and are starting to participate in things. And this will be her first state banquet. She'll also be attending the return dinner, which is, or the return event, which is held on the second day, which is where the visiting country does an event to say thank you for the visit. Yes, I mean, shall we just go head first
Let's do
into,
this dive into Tiara land.
yeah, that's, well, that's the most exciting, it's the most shallow, but it's also the most exciting thing to talk about, really, is we're going to get to see her in a tiara.
So, Amalia is the queen of the Tiara princesses and is just a joy to watch wear tiaras. And it's really exciting to see what she'll be wearing. Because she could wear a tiara she's already worn. She could wear a brand new tiara. She could wear a tiara that other people have worn, but she hasn't yet. There's just so many options.
Yeah. So we found out when it was part of her 18th birthday celebrations, they released a book about her. And in that book, I think it was where we discovered that she is a massive, massive nerd for tiaras. I'm sure lots of royals like wearing them, but Amalia's like fascinated by the history of them and is upset, you know. And she's already worn three different tiaras, despite only having been to three tiara events. So, you know, there's lots of options. And I think also like the Dutch royal family have a huge selection of tiaras compared to some other royal families because they've been very smart. This is probably an episode in itself, but they've been very smart about making sure that pieces are kept in the family rather than being sold off or inherited or whatever. She genuinely could wear a new tiara, fourth tiara for the fourth tiara event, and still have more left to wear.
I love it. It's really exciting because I think when it comes to tiaras, for most royals, it's really easy to guess where they're going because they either have a set tiara or a set couple that they choose to wear. So for Kate, she tends to go for the Lover's Knot tiara. And then for other royals, they have a bigger selection, but they tend to keep to their sort of their favourites within that, or they'll go for like the Nobel Prizes. Sylvia sort of switches between two tiaras, whereas the rest of the time she occasionally brings out a surprise one, but you know for the nobles she'll be wearing one of two. But with the baby royals, the new royals, the little princesses who are growing up and becoming tiara wearers, it's really exciting to see if they're going to wear something that's new for them, if they're going to wear an old one. And what we tend to have noticed is they tend to wear the same tiara or the same one or two tiaras every time we see them. So I think Princess Ingrid Alexandra has always worn the same tiara when we've seen her. And Elizabeth of Belgium, we've seen her in more than one tiara, but I think once we've seen her it was a new one and one was an old one. So it's a bit different. Whereas with Amalia, we know she's got this passion for tiaras. We've seen her in three different ones already. Like you said, she could. You know, there's like 15 tiaras in the Dutch royal family. She could just keep going with it. She could be like, yeah, I'm going to wear another one. And then next time I'm going to wear another one again. And she'll keep going.
Yeah, definitely. And I think she's also not restricted. What I find so exciting about Amalia as a tiara wearer is that she's not restricted by some of the other things that tend to restrict people. So I don't mean this is a criticism, and I know it might sound like it, but some people don't have the face for certain tiaras. So that does, like Kate is a beautiful woman, absolutely. And she looks so gorgeous in the Lover's Knot. It's like it was made for her, like absolutely glorious in it. But there are certain tiaras, like the ones that Camilla tends to wear, like the Delhi Durbar, that are massive. And I just can't imagine how they would look on Kate's head because she's quite a, she's not petite because she's tall, but she's got like petite features and quite delicate features. And she's got quite, not flat hair, but like she doesn't have the big puffy hair that you often have in the older royal women. And so there, you know, I think Ingrid Alexandra's tiara that she wears looks absolutely perfect on her. And Elizabeth is not my favorite, but looks quite nice on her. But I think what's exciting about Amalia is that she seems to have inherited this thing that her mother and her grandmother both have, where she has this kind of natural, I want to call it gravitas, where even at a young age, I think you could put something like the Luxembourg Empire tiara, which if people don't know what that is, I would Google it because it's enormous. It's one of my favorite tiaras just because of how massive it is. It's absurdly massive. She could pull something like that, or the Stuart tiara, which she can't wear because she's not queen, but is a massive tiara in the Dutch collection. And I think she could wear that now at 20 years old and she would pull it off in a way that a lot of other people would be maybe too young or not have the right features or the right hair. There's just something about her where she can wear something that's quite substantial. And so a lot of the time with like young royals, so if I think back, it was a while ago, but if I think back to like Victoria, her first tiara was hideous, just some wires that have been stuck on her head. And so I think that's what you see with a lot of like first time tiara wearers or young tiara wearers is they get some sort of little piddly piece that is not great. Whereas with Amalia, like she can wear those big statement pieces already. And so I think that's one of the things that makes her so exciting. And like when she wore the sapphire tiara, which is at Christian's birthday.
Yes, Christian's birthday.
Christian's birthday, she wore the way she wore her hair, even like pinned back at the sides. It just like she just you clearly can tell she's a big fan of tiaras because I think a lot of people think that tiara wearing, and I say this is not, you know, I haven't worn a tiara, I'm talking like I'm some sort of expert, but I think a lot of people think tiara wearing is just like you put it on your head, but it's all about like how it's positioned and how you put your hair with it and how it matches with the clothing and jewelry and all, you know, it's a whole, it's an accessory, it's part of a whole outfit. And I think Amalia, because she's a tiara nerd, has this like innate understanding of how to wear a tiara in the best way.
Yes, definitely. And also, if we look at the tiara she's worn so far, she tends to wear the big tiaras, but they're often also slightly unusual. They're not, safe tiaras, because there are some tiaras like a fringe tiara or a loopy diamond pearl tiara type thing, which is going to look nice on everyone because it's colorless, it's very classic, pretty princessy. The first time we saw her in a tiara was the star tiara, which is a tiara with great big stars on it, which, often looks awful. And she's also worn the ruby peacock tiara to Hussein and Rajwa's wedding reception. It's like a really big and pointy, but right in the middle,
Peacock
which I
feather.
assume is the peacock bit. But it does look odd, but she's got this incredible ability to make them work for her because she knows how to wear them. But it also means when you're looking at what she might wear in the future, you can't rule out something because it looks odd. Like, I was going through them and I was thinking, oh no, I don't like that. And I was like, yeah, but Amalia could probably pull it off, couldn't she?
Well, yeah, I mean, in terms of thinking about what I actually want her to wear, I'm really torn because Amalia is going to be here for a little while yet, and I kind of want the excitement of seeing her wear a new thing every so often. So if they could work out exactly how many tiaras she could wear, and then a rough idea of how long they think she'll be crown princess, because obviously her dad will abdicate, so he'll have a rough idea of when he might want to do that. And then they could work out like, you know, they have to wear a new tiara every 3.5 years or something, and she can do it that way. And then I would feel better that like I'm getting just I just I it's actually something that we debate quite a lot in this podcast. You're probably learning a lot about me, Grace, because my innate hoarder of like, but what if? This is why we almost didn't do Camilla and Charles last week, because I was like, but we should wait because what about their 20th anniversary? And then Grace is like, but you know, we might not have a podcast in a year. We should do that. So
Anything can
exactly. So maybe I should be a bit more like, well, anything can happen. We should just have Amalia wear any tiara she wants. And if she is going to wear a new tiara, having looked at some of the options, I think the laurel wreath. Was that on your list? Do you have a list?
It's on my list, but it was on my list as one I didn't want her to wear.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Why so?
It's very subtle and small, which is fine, but I'm thinking it's a state dinner and she's going to have Letizia and Maxima there to compete with.
That's true. And Letizia is also a big tiara carrier. She can carry them off.
Chances are those two are going to come out with whopping great big tiaras. So I made hers bigger to sort of fit that.
Yeah, that's a fair point. You know, it's going to be a tiara. I bet now that they wear like their tiniest ones. Now that we said this,
They're going to be in teeny tiny tiaras. They're going to be wearing like the diamond one that looks like little eyes.
looks like a bracelet. That Maxima wears. Yeah, I know. I bet they are now that we've said that, and everyone will be sitting listening to this, going, "You stupid people." What's your pick then? What would you like her to wear?
Okay, so if she's wearing one that she has already worn, I think she should repeat the Ruby Peacock tiara. It's big, it's dramatic, it's a bit odd, and also it's got the red in it, and I've got a feeling she could wear some kind of red themed outfit, or like a florally pink one, if you know what I mean.
Yes, because if she wears a red dress, something I'm going to mention later, she'll have a yellow sash. So that's the colours of the Spanish flag.
Another tiara that would look really good would be Queen Emma's diamond tiara, which has got like three bigger stones. And then the middle stone can be changed for a not diamond, which I would just like to see whether Amalia would wear it with a diamond, as is normally done, or whether she'd wear it with something a bit different. And it's not as big as some of the others, not as big as the Ruby Peacock, but it's a little bit more unusual. And I think she could probably make it work, because it doesn't always look good on flatter head people.
Yes.
But it's one of those ones I think could look really good if you wear it right.
So one of the reasons, beyond the sort of shallow but very important tiara reason, that I'm excited about this is because it's quite a big milestone. So we've talked a lot, even within this episode a little bit, about kind of the cyclical nature of royal watching. And, you know, you're watching a family. And so they have the natural cycle that a family, any family has. The people who we watched as children are now in their late teens, early 20s, and are coming into their own. They're starting to speak more in public. We're starting to learn more about who they are as more than just an extension of their parents. It's a bit like every time they do a new thing, it's like, oh, it's like a first. It's kind of like, I feel like their parent who's got like a baby's first book, and this is like baby's first state visit. So it's, you know, it's significant because it's her first state banquet that she's attending, which is obviously a big milestone. But I also think it's the first state banquet from anyone in her generation.
Yeah, it's Amalia's milestone. It's a milestone for her entire generation of royalty. So it's got to go well. No pressure.
One step for Amalia.
So the other part to the state visit that is exciting has kind of already happened, which is that we heard that King Felipe of Spain has given Princess Amalia the Grand Cross of the Order of Isabella the Catholic. So first state banquet, first order is a whole load of first. This will be a big page in the baby book.
In the baby book, yeah, it'll be a huge page, yeah. Different royal families have different systems for awarding honours. So in some, like, you don't know until they turn up that they've got it. Whereas in Spain, helpfully, they have to, because things have to be signed off. So I think this officially came from the Spanish Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So because of that, it's like a decree and it's issued in advance. So you always know who Spain has given orders to before they even go to the country, which is very helpful for us when we're doing a podcast. So yes, they announced that Amalia's got this Order of Isabella the Catholic, which is a yellow and white sash. But yes, so I think it's significant, obviously, because, as we say, it's Amalia's first foreign honour. But it's also, I think, significant because if you look at her generation, she's not the first to get a foreign order. Christian and Ingrid have both got foreign orders. Basically, Christian of Denmark has got the Norwegian honour and Ingrid of Norway has got the Danish order. But that's because it's tradition when the heir turns 18, or one of the heirs, that they give them the order from their country. So Norway gives it to Denmark and Denmark gives it to Norway. So it was like a birthday present, really. So although Amalia isn't the first to have a foreign honour, she is the first of her generation to get a foreign honour because of her participation in a state visit.
Yeah, it's a bit like if you compare like the little order, is it the Order of Seraphim that the Swedish babies get when they're at their christening, when they're little tiny babies? They just get it for being a baby. They've not done anything to get it.
You don't know what babies have contributed to the Swedish monarchy, Grace. You do not know. I do just want to talk about the very confusing world of royal honours for a while. So the two honours above Isabella the Catholic are the Order of Charles III and the Golden Fleece. And then there's an order below Isabella the Catholic, which is the Order of Civil Merit. And the Golden Fleece, as well as having like the best name of all honours, in my opinion, the Order of the Golden Fleece. Amazing. I'm Jason and the Argonauts. Brilliant. It's never given to anyone who isn't a monarch or like the Spanish heir. So even Queen Letizia doesn't have it. The Golden Fleece can't be the first thing you get.
Yeah, you've got to build up to it.
Yeah. But whether or not it's Carlos the the Charles III honor or the Isabella the Catholic one, it doesn't seem to matter as long as you've already got something. To go back to Amalia a little bit, in terms of Isabella the Catholic, it's standard that that is the honor that goes to the heir. And I think there might be some people who are kind of thinking, oh gosh, well, Amalia is really young. What has she possibly contributed to relationships between the Netherlands and Spain? And, you know, but it's just sort of, I think it's just coincidental, not to take away from Amalia's achievement or the milestone that I just mentioned a minute ago, but it is just coincidental that she happens to be 20 years old at the time that they're visiting the country. If you look at somebody like Crown Princess Victoria, she got the Order of Isabella the Catholic in 2021, so she was much, much older, and it's not because her contribution to Spain is less than Amalia's. It's just because there hadn't been a state visit between Spain from Spain to Sweden that she could have participated in since 1983 when she was six. And then this is where it starts to get confusing, because it makes sense, in my view, that you would give an order to the people who participate in a state visit, because you're saying, like, this visit was part of building relationships between us. You participated in it, so you get an order. Prince Harry, his only foreign order is Isabella the Catholic's. Because he was part of the Spanish state visit in 2017 when Spain visited the UK. So, you know, totally makes sense. However, William and Kate both attended the state banquet in 2017 for the Spanish state visit, and they did not get any orders.
And I'm still bitter.
Yes, this is the point of this. I've moved away from Mali entirely because I just want to say this. You might say, oh, well, Harry did a different engagement. He didn't just go to the state banquet. He also went to he laid flowers at the grave of the unknown soldier or whatever. He went with them to that. So maybe that's why. And, you know, Amalia is also doing the return dinner. So she's not just doing the banquet. And maybe that's what it is. And you know, that you get something. However, spanner in that idea, because the lower order that I mentioned earlier, the Order of Civil Merit, was awarded to Joachim and Marie in Denmark when the Spanish couple visited there in 2023, and they weren't even in the country. So really, this whole long ramble has been completely nothing to do with Amalia, and I'm very sorry to have hijacked the conversation about her to talk about this, but this is really justice for Kate. And she doesn't have any like proper foreign orders except from one from Tuvalu, which, you know, I think was kind of made up. I don't think anyone else has ever had it.
Just appeared suddenly. They're like, oh, we're not giving Kate any yet.
Yeah, made no sense. That's a Commonwealth one as well. The monarch is the monarch of Tuvalu, so it's not, you know, it kind of it isn't like a foreign country that's totally separate that's given her an honor. She hasn't got any yet. And again, that's no reflection on her. It's because she hasn't. They haven't had the opportunity or whatever. But it's really about justice for Kate.
It is. And then I started thinking about, you know, as is always happens around this time, rumours about what state visits are going to come to the UK this year. And I think that it better not be from another monarchy, because I'm not having them start giving out foreign orders again and Kate not be there. It's not
Oh, of
acceptable.
course, yes, she won't be
So
there.
just start handing them out.
I think I've seen some people try to explain this situation, and the best explanation that I can find, which I don't like, but I understand, is that it's about the reciprocity between the two countries. So some countries have quite hard and fast rules about who they do and don't allocate to, and others are a bit more relaxed about it. So if you look at Denmark, when Felipe and Letizia went there in 2023, they both got the highest order that the Danish royal family gives out. And so, in response, they gave honours of some description to like everybody who didn't have one. Whereas, notoriously, the Queen over here was very stingy. And so, in 2017, when Felipe and Letizia went to the UK, Felipe got the Order of the Garter, which is the highest order, but Letizia got nothing, not even a lower order that was available. Even though when the Danish couple visited the UK, Prince Henrik, who was married to Queen Margrethe, he got the Order of the Bath, I think, which was a lower order than the Order of the Garter, but is still one of the sort of top four honours in the UK. So that might be the explanation, but I'm still going to be bitter about it forever that Prince Harry got the Order of Isabella the Catholic, and Kate has got nothing from another country.
I think it's so interesting when you look at the because Wikipedia is really helpful. They've got like a list of all the honors like Spain have given to other countries and other countries have given to whoever, and you look at all the lists and it's obviously like, you know, a huge, quite a big list for Belgium, every single Danish royal, you know, big list for Jordan and Norway and Sweden, and Britain's just it's Charles, Harry, Andrew and Anne. Like, there were other royals there. Camilla was there, you know. Edward and Sophie were there. The Gloucesters and the Kents were all there.
Yeah.
And they were just like, no, we are not giving you lot royal special honours. I'm sorry. You're not giving us them. We're not giving you them.
No. I mean, I do think it was unfair that I think the Queen was wrong to not give something to Letizia when she did give something to Henrik. It's sad that Kate was punished because of the Queen's decisions.
I've gone completely off on a bit of a Google search when we have this conversation. And compared to the other royal families, the British royals have got significantly fewer foreign honours than like everyone else.
Yeah.
Probably because the Queen just flat refused to give any out. So everyone was like, yeah, we're not giving them to Britain either.
I do think that reciprocal thing is probably quite true. It's the only argument that makes sense to me, because the UK, I know that there's this idea that like the UK are standoffish and things like that, but they do participate in state visits, and they don't give honours to people because they actually have contributed to the Spanish culture. Like, Amalia's done nothing, no offence to Amalia, but she's 20 years old and she's Dutch. She's done nothing really to improve the life of people in Spain, which is usually what an honour is awarded for. So she's getting it because it's like a formal part of the visit that they give out and receive honours. So even if it was two countries that hated each other, two monarchies, or, you know, a monarchy that hated the British, they would still give honours if the Queen also gave honours. And I think it's her sort of hardline position of like, no, I'm only going to give the Order of the Garter, and it's only going to be to the main one and nobody else, especially the women, don't care about you. I think that because of that policy, it has meant that other members of her family have not been as likely to get honours as, you know, somebody like Crown Princess Victoria, who's got a million of them.
No, that's it, Charles. You've got to start giving out more of these honours to people for my own sanity.
Yeah, definitely. So that's really, sorry, Amalia, but we've made this whole thing about why we think that this French, not the French, why would the French be involved? the Spanish should retroactively give Kate the Order of Isabella the Catholic.
We could just release a press release. Like, we know we're on our way to the Netherlands, but we've been really thinking about this and we've made a mistake, and it's no one's fault apart from Queen Elizabeth, and she's dead now. So,
what a get well gift.
Yeah, it's like, here, have an honour. We're besties.
Yeah.
Here's an honour from me.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for this slightly different episode this week. It was quite nice to do some light bites and not have anybody on death's door. Tiaras and babies, back to what we used to do. We are still accepting questions for our upcoming 100th episode, so you can send them to us on Tumblr, our email, or Instagram. The links are always in the description. There will be other ways that you can contribute coming up soon, which we're very excited about. But other than that, it is a goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.